Before we get into the last weekend watch list of 2022 and the last one until February, we have to mention that this episode is brought to you by Paramount Pictures' Babylon. Damien Chazelle's new film is currently in theaters and stars Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie, and Diego Calva.
If we can be real for a second, Babylon has gone nuclear, being on over 120,000 Letterboxd watch lists. And it's about early Hollywood decadence and depravity that you have to see in theaters to be a part of the conversation.
But Babylon isn't just a chronicle of reckless extravagance. No. They wouldn't stop there. It also charts early artistic innovations within the film industry. Movie lovers love movies about movies with big movie stars. So see it in theaters today. And now, let's get on with the show.
Okay, now welcome to Weekend Watch List, a look at what's screening and streaming, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mia, he's Slim.
Hello.
And they're Mitchell.
Hello.
And together we'll dig through what's dropping in 2023, what's in our own personal watch list for the upcoming year, and we'll also make our own shocking prediction for what's going to happen to the current size of our watch lists.
For the first time ever, this episode is so big we needed all three hosts of Weekend Watch List. So we're veering from our normal format to see what the heck is coming in the new year and what we're adding to those watch lists.
We did mention it. We mentioned it a few times recently, but we're going to be taking the whole month of January off to reconnect with ourselves, reconnect with our watch list, and to just take a break. Well, me and Slim will be taking a break. Mia Vecino will be in overdrive with our new Best in Show series, which you can get a teaser. Check out the teaser on our feed right now for that. So people, for the holiday gift-giving spirit, Slim and I are giving you the gift of not having to hear us for the next month or so, and you will get a heavier dose of Mia.
Thank you. Thank you for the plug, Mitchell. Thank you very much.
Of course.
Yes, Best in Show. Check it out. Best in Show. Here is how this episode is going to go down. We will look through the list of the top 10 most watchlisted movies coming out in 2023. And from there, we'll go roundtable style through each of us to see which movies in particular we are most excited about and the ones that are sitting on our own watch lists, just waiting to be checked off.
First things first, let's reveal the top 10 most watchlisted movies of 2023 so far as of recording. And before I even do that, we should say we're not making a guarantee about money back. We don't know how long this episode's going to be. It could be 30 minutes, could be 60 minutes, but we're not paying anyone, okay? We're just saying this is a giant-sized episode, so right off the bat. So number 10, a movie, I mean, what's the meme? I haven't heard that name in a long time. Number 10, Wonka. Paul King, it's on 40,000 watch lists. The synopsis, a young Willy Wonka embarks on a mission to spread joy through his chocolate, which quickly becomes a phenomenon. So I honestly thought this movie like came out. I feel like that Avatar story that's going around. I thought
Edie
this movie
Falco,
came out.
Edie Falco.
I'm Eddie Falco. Didn't this movie come out years ago? It's not even out yet. Mia, your thoughts on Wonka?
So I remember when that video got leaked of Timmy Chalamet singing his little song about having gold sovereigns in his pocket. I think that's what you're remembering. Oh, God,
I don't even remember that.
Oh, man. Well, it's a musical. I think this synopsis neglects to tell us that, it's a musical. He will be singing. And two, it's about Willy Wonka discovering the Oompa Loompas for some reason. They thought that that's what they should focus on, like the most problematic, weird part about the Wonka story. They were like, let's go all in. I don't know. But you know what? F it. This is coming out on my birthday. I will be there. I will be on so many candy edibles. I've had this running joke that I'm going to get a long-term partner by the Wonka premiere.
I believe in you.
It's just a person made out of edibles. It'll be just like a giant human-sized gummy that you'll take into the theater.
Yeah, that's my goal.
My prediction is after this Best in Show series, the door is going to be knocking down of potential suitors coming after Mia.
Just for the plus one to the Wonka premiere, though, not for any other reason. Playing the long game. Oh, Mitchell, what are your thoughts? I know Timothée Chalamet is your favorite actor, so.
Yeah, safe space. I'm not the biggest Chalamet head out there, and I am also not the biggest let's dive into all the IP and do the origin stories of characters that we were just, you know, really jonesing to figure out what their upbringing was like. I don't care about any of that stuff. But I will say, Wonka, as Slim mentioned, is directed by Paul King.
Yes.
Who directed the first two Paddington movies. So I feel like cautious optimism is in store for this one. If anybody can make this work, it is Paul King, bringing Sally Hawkins in, bringing Olivia Colman in. There are actors that I like in this.
Some names.
Rowan Atkinson, everybody loves.
The King.
Who doesn't love
Mr. Bean himself.
Mr. Bean himself.
Okay, speaking of stacked casts, though, number 9 on the list, Asteroid City, directed by Wes Anderson.
Oh my God.
Famously known for his star-studded ensembles. So this is on 40,000 watch lists. Here's the synopsis. In an American desert town circa 1955, the itinerary of a junior stargazer / space cadet convention is spectacularly disrupted by world-changing events.
This is a safe space, right? This is probably the safest,
course,
the only safe
this.
Space on the internet.
Yeah.
I've kind of snoozed a little bit on Wes Anderson's more recent films.
What was the last one? What was the last one that got you good?
Last one I saw, I might have watched Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Great movie.
And I liked that one. That movie probably came out 20 years ago, for all I know. 2009. But Wes has had a few since then. And I know that the Wes heads out there, the Wes Mafia, they're hard on Wes. They love Wes. So I feel like this is going to be a big Letterboxd movie. And I'm going to be in the sidelines enjoying it for everyone else.
It's in the top 10 most anticipated of next year.
It is. And wait until people see the rest of this list. Let's just say that. Wait until they see the rest of this list.
There's some stuff coming.
Are you an Anderson head? Are you a Wes head?
I'm not. I can't say that I am. I really like his early stuff. I'm one of those boring people. And I know I've seen flack on the internet from people who are like, oh, you know, you're not cool if you say that you only like Wes's earlier movies and you don't like the most recent stuff. Well, I am not cool. I'll say right here, I'm not cool. I like the early stuff. I like Bottle Rocket. I love Rushmore, Royal Tenenbaums. That's good. But I feel like the more recent ones have kind of been losing me a bit. But what I will say is that this movie, Asteroid City, stars none other than Thomas Hanks.
What?
Our very own beloved father of Chet Hanks. We all love. So I feel like that's kind of the big thing for me that has got me excited about this. I'm a big Tom Hanks fan. Mm. And I really feel like it's been a long time since we've seen him with like an auteur director like this. Like, I feel like Cloud Atlas is maybe the last time that I remember him. Like,
Baz Luhrmann is weeping. Said. No, I'm kidding.
We all, my apologies to Colonel Parker. I feel like, so I'm stoked for the cast in this Tom Hanks. Matt Dillon is in this, who I think is like that's rad as hell. We've been talking a lot about Matt Dillon on the main show recently. And so I think he could be really fun as like one of those like against type, like Wes Anderson things like Ed Norton or Adrian Brody or Bruce Willis. So, I mean, I'm interested in it for sure. I'm definitely more hyped for this than I have been for like the last few Wes Anderson movies. What about you, Mia?
Well, it's also got your boy, Willem Dafoe.
Of course. I mean, Willem Dafoe's been in the last few, so it goes without saying, but I'm like very, of course, excited about my sweet, sweet father, Willem Dafoe.
And I'm excited for Jason Schwartzman. He's always, I love when he shows up in a Wes Anderson. I'm looking forward to this. I liked The French Dispatch more than others, perhaps. But he really lost me with Isle of Dogs.
I gotta be honest.
But I loved Grand Budapest Hotel. Like, that's maybe my favorite Wes Anderson, and that's a little more recent. So I have hope for this. I'm excited.
Let's talk about real hope in movies. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. By James Mangold, 40,000 watch lists. Finding himself in a new era approaching retirement, Indy wrestles with fitting into a world that seems to have outgrown him. But as the tentacles of an all too familiar evil return in the form of an old rival, Indy must don his hat and pick up his whip once more to make sure an ancient and powerful artifact doesn't fall into the wrong hands. And the trailer for this just dropped a few weeks ago. Some questionable CGI riding a horse in the trailer, admittedly. But I am all in. I mean, there was like a preview that came out a couple months ago at some Disney fest. Harrison came out weeping after footage played on screen. He was weeping. He was so excited about this movie.
That's a man who doesn't weep often.
He does not weep often. Mia, will you weep for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny?
I will weep when they show de-aged Harrison Ford, because all my life I have been working on a way to like build some sort of time machine, go back to the 80s, just hang out with Harrison Ford for a little bit.
He's going to the Wonka premiere with you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I can't wait.
De-aged Harrison Ford de-aged with me Harrison at the Wonka premiere. And he's also an edible of some kind.
Wow, that's my dream night, December 15th, 2023. But I mean, it's Indiana Jones, so I like feel like I have to do it. Like I have to go and see what he's up to, which is the whole trap of the IP thing, is because they make you feel like you have to
trap.
You have to do it, and then we do it. So yeah, you know, Phoebe Waller-Bridge is there, and I'm a big fan of hers. So I'm in it to kind of see what she's bringing to Indy. But other than that, I'm very purposefully not raising
not
my
hopes
too high. Yeah, because Crystal Skull, that was the last time we got our hopes up, right? How do we feel about Crystal Skull real quick?
We should have gotten our hopes up for it. I think it was right to get our hopes up for it. It's a great movie.
I actually rewatched it last year. I had a lot of fun with it.
It's a great movie.
I'm an apologist. I'm a Crystal Skull apologist.
Maybe I should revisit, because I have not rewatched since it came out in theaters, and I saw
it
with my family, and we were like, no. But I was young then. Maybe I'm different now, and I appreciate the aliens, and Kate Blanchett is there, and I'll close my eyes during Shia LaBeouf's parts.
She's so good in it. She's
Mitchell,
so great.
Mitchell, are you ready for the Dial of Destiny?
I am ready-ish. I love Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I think that is a great movie. Would I say it's the best Indiana Jones movie? Maybe. I don't know.
Oh my
we'll
God.
See.
Whoa, high praise. Okay, rewatch, Mitchell. You have convinced me.
But the thing with Dial of Destiny is, reading that plot synopsis, that's kind of rough.
It's not a great synopsis.
It's not a great synopsis. But to be fair, how many Indiana Jones movies have great, like, how many of those sound great on paper? How many of them are, like, great synopses? You know, I feel like once you're in there, you're seeing him cracking the whip. It's Harrison Ford. Like, Harrison Ford has always said this is, like, his, like, favorite. Like, Indiana Jones is, like, his guy. Like, he loves him more than Han Solo. Like, this has been the one for him. And so I feel like him getting back in there is pretty exciting. If he's excited, I'm excited. I don't know about him wrestling with fitting into a world that seems to have outgrown him, and like whatever they're gonna do with that.
We haven't even outgrown him.
Exactly. Yeah. Like what?
He's
I don't,
still cool. He's eternally cool.
I don't know about all that, but But the Phoebe Waller-Bridge, the Mads Mikkelsen of it all, like they've got some quality coming in here. And I don't know if we, you know, James Mangold is directing it. And James Mangold, you know, he's done some pretty good movies, so maybe he can capture some magic. Spielberg notoriously was not super happy with Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, so maybe it's nice to get some new blood in there.
Yeah, need some new blood, big time. Yeah.
New superhero alert from Indiana Jones to Ant-Man, huh?
Oh, God.
Who's excited for Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania? Directed by Peyton Reed on 40,000 watch lists. Superhero duo Scott Lang and Hope Van Dyne, together with Hope's parents Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne, find themselves exploring the quantum realm, interacting with strange new creatures, and embarking on an adventure that will push them beyond the limits of what they thought was possible. Okay, can I just say, I have no idea who these people are.
This is a safe, we said it earlier, this is a safe space.
Okay, this is a safe space. I know Scott Lang. I know Scott Lang is Ant-Man, Paul Rudd. I don't know the rest of these people. I think it's really funny that they're acting like, oh yeah, Hope's parents, Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne, of course. My favorite characters in the MCU.
We'll see this a few more times maybe with like popular Marvel movies in the watch list top 10. And these movies are going to make so much money at the box office. Like Doctor Strange and the Multiverse made so much money. It still blows my mind, but the Marvel train is running.
We can't stop it.
You know, if you missed a few train cars earlier, you are out of the loop, my friend. I saw Wakanda Forever and Julia Louis-Dreyfus showed up and it was like assumed that I should know kind of what's happening. But
she's
I don't watch I don't watch the Marvel TV shows, so I was like, "Oh, I'm out of the loop. I'm aged out of the Marvel movies. I'm not even 40. Come on, give me a break here." But I do see this as when I read comic books, like something cool happens, a series starts, and the first year or two is really good. But then as soon as you start to add in other variables, other storylines. You get bogged down. So it's interesting to me as a comic reader start to see that happening with the movies. Like if you miss a few movies, you miss a few issues. You need to catch up or else you're in trouble.
Or else you don't know who Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne are.
Right, exactly. So yeah, I mean, it's going to make a lot of money.
I've seen all the movies, but I haven't, I stopped watching, I watched like WandaVision, I think I watched the Falcon and Winter Soldier series, but I didn't watch like the other series. And so, yeah, I mean, they're making you do your homework with these mm-hmm. things, because I know Jonathan Majors is in Quantumania playing Kang the Conqueror, and apparently he like shows up at the end of, people can, you know, come at me if I'm wrong about this, but apparently he shows up at the end of Loki as like...
Mitchell's mentions are going to go wild on this episode. Yeah.
As like
yeah,
a time variant version of Kang. So it's like, I don't know what's going on with that, if we need to like be able to follow that. But the thing that I'm interested in about Quantumania is Jonathan Majors. That dude is a very attractive man and a very good actor to boot. You know, he's not just the good looks. And I mean, he's going to be blowing up this year. Creed 3, yeah. He's in that Magazine Dreams movie that's playing at Sundance with a very enticing still image that they put out with
yes.
it. So, I mean, I'm stoked for that. I'm happy for him. And I mean, Quantumania, if you're only going to watch one Marvel movie this year, you might want to watch this one, because they're really putting their chips in the Kang the Conqueror basket with like the new Avengers movies mm-hmm. coming in a few years tied around Kang. So this is definitely one that people are going to want to check out.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to hear from Majors for years to come in this like Avengers movie series too. So he's in it for the long haul, it seems like.
I will say, if I do see an MCU film this year, I feel like I would have to see this one because it's directed by Peyton Reed, who directed one of my favorite films of all time, Down with Love.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
we have to support. Yeah. Also, yeah, they keep putting Tim Heidecker and Greg Turkington in these things. So you have to trust.
My heroes, Greg Turkington and Tim Heidecker.
The so real superheroes.
I might just have to go see it just to see this so I can get in on the ground floor.
Well, my hero is one Keanu Reeves, who features in our next film, number 6 on Letterboxd Community's top 10 most anticipated 2023, John Wick. Chapter 4, directed by Chad Stahelski on 65,000 watch lists. You want to know what's going on with John in this one? Synopsis: with the price on his head ever increasing, John Wick uncovers a path to defeating the High Table. But before he can earn his freedom, Wick must face off against a new enemy with powerful alliances across the globe and forces that turn old friends into foes. Oh no, buddy, old friends into foes. This guy cannot catch a break. Do you remember? I can't even remember if it was the end of the second one, right? Where like the mark was put on him, like it was all out on John Wick, and then like you just see everybody turning against him. Like that, the end of, I think that was the second one, right? The end of John Wick 2 was like the most hype I've ever been about like a cliffhanger of like one of these movies. Like I was so ready for John Wick 3, like right off the bat. I mean, I love this goddamn franchise. Give me every single one of these. This is
Mitchell
this is
has
my
woken
MCU.
Up at
this
number 6. MCU. Mitchell is awake with
I'm
the Letterboxd community
for John Wick. Although I did just catch that in our doc where we have our notes prepped for the episode, Slim says that John Wick is the most overrated franchise in history.
So. I also say at the end of that sentence, shh, not safe. So I don't even. Listen, people can love John Wick. It's not for me. That's fine. Not every movie is for everyone. And I'll leave it at that. Mia, what do you think of the John Wick franchise?
Mia, help me out.
I'm going to help you out, Mitchell. I'm on Team Mitchell. I love yes. John Wick. I'm not much of an action movie girl generally, but this one really, really gets me. Just like all of the choreographed fight scenes are so, so
hell yeah.
compelling and dynamic and so fun to watch. And then for this one in particular, they've cast one of my favorite pop stars, Rina Sawayama. She is amazing. She puts on a great live show that's like I just saw her live a month ago. And you can tell that she has been practicing for John Wick because she was pulling all these really cool moves on stage. And I'm just so excited to see what they're letting her do in this. So I will be there.
Chapter 4. We need to go back, though, to part 2 of Dune. That's our number 5 movie. Denis Villeneuve. 84,000 watch lists. We're jumping up right now. The numbers are going hot and heavy. Follow the mythic journey of Paul Atreides as he unites with Chani and the Fremen while on a warpath of revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family. So I had some gripes with the first Dune. I liked it. I felt I got swindled a little bit by having it be a part one without a part two even being confirmed. There was some swindling happening from Legendary and friends. With that said, I think this is going to like blow up everything on Letterboxd when this movie finally comes out and people see these two together fighting for good. Mitchell, what do you think?
I feel like Dune Part 1, the most interesting stuff is happening in the last like 20 minutes. So I'm like, I mean, if they're going to get me in, I guess it'll be Part 2. They are bringing in some dope people for this. Florence Pugh is coming in for this one. Mm-hmm. Austin Butler, Elvis himself is coming in. We'll see if he can drop the vernacular, if he can drop the accent that he is still doing in all of the like press
he'll,
stuff.
He'll
that
never
he's still
be
doing.
Able to get rid of it. It's part of him now.
He just can't let it go. You know, he didn't see his family for 3 years. Leah Sito is in it. I mean, they got some cool people coming in for it. I don't know what's going on with this plot, but we'll see what's going on. You know, David Lynch is doing. I'm in for David Lynch's Dune. Sting in that movie. That guy rules. Let's go back to that. Let's get a part two to that
not
one.
On our top 10 of 2023, David Lynch's Dune with Sting.
What about you, Mia? How many edibles are you taking for Dune Part 2, Mia?
I plan on ODing a little bit on the edibles. That's what I did for Dune Part 1. I guess it's just called Dune. I saw it in IMAX. I was loaded up. I had the time of my life just kind of absorbing it. So yeah, this is going to be like Wonka for me, another Timothée Chalamet picture in the sense that IMAX third row.
Oh my God. Third row.
That's
Mia,
what
please,
I did last
no.
time. No, jeez. It's good. It's good. You're really
is
fully immersed
third row?
In the world.
Oh my
yes.
God. I would
have to trust
Slim,
me.
Slim, what's your seat of choice in a movie theater?
I'll probably go like row 17-ish, that range. Obviously try to get to the middle, but if it's one of my like, you know, small fry theaters, I'll get back row because they don't have
well,
that many.
To be clear, my ideal row is that row with like the bars in front. Do you know that one?
Oh,
it's like
yeah.
in the
put
second
the feet
half.
Up.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you can put your feet up. There's nobody blocking your view. That is my ideal choice. I just need to set the record straight. I can't have people thinking I'm a third row girl always.
We're setting the record straight on the final episode of We Can Watch.
There's no coming back from that. That's for sure. So our next number four, we talked about some Marvel trains rolling through. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 by James Gunn. 89,000 watch lists. Peter Quill still reeling from the loss of Gamora. Must rally his team around him to defend the universe along with protecting one of their own. You know, I do have many friends that are still on board with the Marvel, the MCU. And when I think about it, it is a fun movie going experience because if you get your family in on it, like you have kids, you have like grandparents that are also watching these movies, it becomes an event. Y'all go to the theater to see the most latest and greatest Marvel movie and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. I think this is the last one for this group of people. It's finally coming out in 2023. I just actually saw a preview for it in front of Avatar 2 this week.
Yeah, I don't want to bag like too much. I know that I am a little bit of a curmudgeon when it comes to these like Marvel movies and stuff. But like you and Slim, you and I were talking on the Avatar episode of We Can Watch This about how like I do have a really like soft spot for movies like this because of seeing them with my mom in theaters and like it being, you know, you can talk as much as you want about how the state of the industry and how messed up it kind of is that these are more or less like the only like big events where like people are going out in droves to like opening nights of them. Like I feel like when, you know, all three of us here were like kids, we remember like going to those like midnight, like actual midnight opening nights of movies and like it feeling like really just like this really special thing. And seeing Marvel movies, seeing like Star Wars movies are really the only things that like get that same kind of like vibe and energy these days. So, you know, I definitely support people who like want to go see this stuff and have a good time doing it. I still like, because I'm not going to theaters, I can't really get that energy as much. Mm-hmm. But if I was still going to theaters, I would be like stoked for them just for the experience of seeing them. I will say, to give Guardians of the Galaxy a prop, Bradley Cooper is Rocky Raccoon in these movies. I think he is delightful. My favorite Bradley Cooper performances are in these Guardians of the Galaxy movies. He is so good. And I love watching the like footage of him like in the audio booth, like recording his like dialogue for it. That shit is a trip.
You mean you didn't fall in love with his Eddie Vedder A Star Is Born performance?
I worship at the altar of Lady Gaga, and that is... That is what I will say about A Star Is Born.
You know, it's funny. I can't think of like a lot of other movies. You're right that the whole family can go out unless it's some kind of big budget DreamWorks animated Minions or whoever is putting Minions
Puss
out.
In Boots,
sure.
The Last Wish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. There's not a lot out there.
My family loves the Guardians of the Galaxy, I will say. Mm-hmm. I know many people who feel a lot for these characters, so I'm very, very happy for them.
Also, coming to IMAX, as always, Christopher Nolan's new movie. This is the moment. We've been going through, you know, we went from chapter 4 to part 2 to volume 3.
Yeah.
We are getting an actual original, you know, straight from the dome movie, Christopher Nolan Oppenheimer, one of those rare directors who, whatever his name is attached to, like everybody, cinephiles, the, you know, mainstream audiences who are going to the multiplexes to see the big stuff, everybody gets hyped for Christopher Nolan movies. 92,000 watch lists, I'm sure that's going to go up. The story of J. Robert Oppenheimer's role in the development of the atomic bomb during World War II. 92,000 people.
Wow.
Stoked to go to IMAX theaters to watch Cillian Murphy build an A-bomb. I mean, you got to give Nolan credit for being able to, like, him and James Cameron are like the two people out there who can like make stuff like this happen and still like get the budgets and like do what they're going to do. What about you guys? What are your thoughts? Are you stoked for Oppenheimer?
His first real theatrical release since Tenet kind of, you know, came out during the height of the pandemic. So I'm curious to see how many people will go to see this. The first trailer I saw was also during my recent Avatar viewing. I hadn't seen anything. It's still very much a teaser. It almost didn't feel like a real movie trailer. It felt almost like someone doing a parody of a Chris Nolan atomic bomb movie trailer. So, but it is. It's an original movie. So we were talking about that earlier. I had to give props to Nolan for putting something out there. Big budget, something new. So I'm excited to see it.
It also has every boy actor in the world.
A lot of young men in this. One.
Yeah, so I'm just going to list a couple.
Okay.
Dane DeHaan, Kenneth Branagh, Josh Hartnett, Benny Safdie, Robert Downey Jr., Matt Damon. I have to be honest. This is why I'm seeing Oppenheimer, solely for Jack Quaid. That's not a joke. I am being 100% earnest right now.
Big movie return for Josh Hartnett. My boy, Josh Hartnett, coming back with a major. He's like on Letterboxd, at least, he's like 7th on the cast list. Above Gary Oldman, above Robert Downey Jr. Let's get Josh Hartnett back in here. Let's get a career resurgence going for this man. He got done dirty by Hollywood. We're coming back. Alden Ehrenreich, speaking of done dirty by Hollywood.
Speaking of done dirty,
Solo,
you're right.
Solo, a Star Wars movie, is an all right movie. He is not what's wrong with that movie if there are things wrong with it. Alden Ehrenreich is a star. His performance in Hail Caesar is a masterclass in acting. Let's get that boy back on the marquee. Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan doing the work, getting our boys back where they belong in the spotlight.
Yeah, they've been out of the spotlight for too long.
We're at number two. We're getting to the big ones. The big ones. Actually, I should point out Oppenheimer leapfrogged Guardians after that new trailer came out last week. It was actually originally number four.
Wow.
But Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is our number two most watch listed movie for 2023. Joaquin Dos Santos, 99,000 watch lists. After reuniting with Gwen Stacy, Miles Morales, Brooklyn's full-time friendly neighborhood Spider-Man is catapulted across the multiverse, which we've mentioned before, where he encounters a team of spider people charged with protecting its very existence. But when the heroes clash on how to handle the new threat, Miles finds himself pitted against the other spiders and must redefine what it means to be a hero so he can save the people he loves most. The trailer came out. There's not a whole lot new in the trailer that just dropped, but it has that music. And that music is enough to just turn me into putty, because the first Spider-Verse movie is maybe the greatest superhero movie ever made, in my opinion. It's my favorite. Mia, what do you think about these Spider-Verse movies?
No, I have to agree. As it is very well known, I am not really a Marvel/superhero head, but I did see Spider-Verse in theaters and I loved it. I agree. It's like, it's easily the best superhero movie I think that I have seen, even though I admittedly haven't seen as many as you. But I haven't seen any
of the Ant-Man movies.
I don't know
if you can say that.
There's nine
best.
Ant-Man movies that Mia has not seen yet.
Speaking of Ant-Man, I know I said that if I was going to see one, it would be Ant-Man, but I'm switching to Spider-Man. It's different. It's okay. Marvel Sony, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
In association
look at me.
With Marvel or something.
I know
like that.
Things.
Industry yeah. veteran Mia Vicino. Mitchell, where do you stand on the Spider-Verse movies?
That first movie rules. You know, the highest rated movie on Letterboxd year in review the year it came out. I'm not mad about that placement. I feel like 2018 was a good, like, I'm, you know, as noted, not a huge superhero movie person, but 2018 was a really great year with that. Black Panther, Incredibles 2, I thought all kind of ruled. But yeah, the first Spider-Verse movie, I think, is the first time in a while that I remember like watching a superhero movie and really being transported back to when I was like a teenager, like obsessively reading comics and just feeling that like energy and like the excitement of like getting in there with these characters. And I think part of it was just like the inventiveness of the aesthetic with it, the animation that they do with it is so cool and really puts you in that like comic mind frame. But also just, I think the energy of the characters and the dialogue and like the rhythm of it is so exhilarating. So I'm like heavy on board for anything that they're doing with the Spider-Verse. I'm definitely like down to get back in that world.
Okay. Okay. It's time to reveal the number one most watchlisted film.
Lyle Lyle Crocodile 2?
Yes, it's Lyle Lyle Crocodile 2.
We did it.
Woohoo! The truth is, it is Greta Gerwig's Barbie.
Interesting.
on 137,000 watch lists. So number two, Spider-Man, that's on 99,000, just to give you a little taste of just how nuclear Barbie has gone. So the synopsis is, a doll living in Barbie land is expelled for not being perfect enough and sets off on an adventure in the real world.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that was the plot of the movie until you just literally read it. And I might have even put this doc together and I didn't read that synopsis. But so yeah, that teaser trailer came out and set the world aflame. We also just had that Margot Robbie video drop last week where she talked about how to use Letterboxd. Wink, wink.
How would she know? How would she know how to use it?
She did it unprompted too. That was just how she began the interview.
Right, right. So are you excited for Barbie? That seems like a silly question for all of us, right, Mia?
I am so hyped for Barbie. I think it's going to save cinema. It comes out the same day as Oppenheimer, which is really funny. Which order are you going to watch these? Barbie first or Oppenheimer first?
I'm a Barbie first, I feel like. I'm more excited for Barbie than I am Oppenheimer. Mitchell?
I feel like, my run with it is, I feel like Barbie makes sense to go second because I feel like Oppenheimer is going to be a little bit of a downer. And, you know, like eating a delicious meal, you save the best part of it for last. You want to end on the high note, right? Not that I'm saying that's Oppenheimer is going to be not a good movie. I'm stoked for both of them, but I feel like Barbie is going to really just put you on that high.
Yeah, it's like the after party type thing.
Exactly. It looks like just a good time. That trailer, they're partying. I feel like the thing I'm so stoked about with Barbie is like, we're, you know, relatively close to it coming out. It comes out in the summer, right? And like, I feel like these days, you know, like, especially the big movies, you know, like exactly what you're getting with them, like well ahead of time. There's so many things about like, oh, this person's cameoing in this. And we know like a bunch of the cameos are like whoever's going to pop up in Barbie. But I feel like I have no idea what this movie's really about. Like that synopsis is so bare, so vague. I feel like that's barely going to tap the surface of what it actually is. And it's really just exciting to be, you know, especially in this era that we're in, that a big, big movie is coming out like this that people are so stoked for. And there's really not that much known about what's actually going to be in it. This is the first time that I even watched, like, I don't watch trailers, I don't watch teasers. This is the first teaser that I even bothered watching since The Matrix Resurrections last year because, like, I just needed The Matrix Resurrections. I was like, I just need whatever I can get, like, as early as I can get it with that movie. And Barbie, like, people were just talking about it. People wouldn't shut up about it. I'd see them, the stills of her doing the 2001, you know, the obelisk thing. And I'm like, all right, let me check this out. I watched it. There's barely anything in that teaser, but it's a blast. Like, I watched that. I was like, yeah, I'll check it out. And now I'm definitely not going to watch, like, the trailer or anything. Like, no, that's all I need. I'm stoked for it.
No, I'm the same way where I don't really watch teasers or trailers unless I'm, like, in a movie theater and they're playing.
Yeah, right.
So I was like, oh, I'm not going to. I saw everybody tweeting, like, the Barbie trailer's playing before whatever. What was it? Avatar?
Avatar,
I shouldn't have said whatever. I didn't mean that. I just didn't remember.
People on TikTok's mad. TikToks are like blowing up with people who like went to go see Avatar to see the Barbie trailer. They didn't play the Barbie trailer. And they're like, God, I paid $20 to see the Barbie trailer. They didn't even play it.
You can go on YouTube.com.
You can go on YouTube.
They need to see it in theaters. They need to see it in theaters to get the full experience.
Well, that's the top 10 of the Letterboxd community's most anticipated. of the year. And we're certainly excited for some of those. Barbie, shout out. John Wick for me, maybe not so much for Slim. But let's find out what the three of us are most excited to see that are coming out this year. Slim, what's on the top of your 2023 watch list? What are you going to be heading out first in line for the theaters for?
It's literally, my 2023 watch list should be one movie. It's Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1.
No way. You?
Tom Cruise, Rebecca Ferguson, my queen. They're back at it again for the 7th installment of this franchise. I saw the trailer. Remember that trailer came out? It looked like Lawrence of Arabia, but it was Tom of Arabia in the desert. It looked amazing. And then that 9-minute video of him, the making of that stunt of him riding the bike off that giant cliff was awesome. I just am so happy that Top Gun Maverick, I feel like, has almost like brought more people to modern Tom in a way that I in no way was expecting.
He saved cinema.
He did save cinema. That's a fact. Christopher Nolan tried, failed, and Tom had to come in and save cinema. What Tenet failed to do, Top Gun Maverick did. What's great about these Mission Impossible movies, I love them. The last several have been just so incredible. Fallout was amazing. Even if that was the last one, I would have been satisfied the way that that turned out. So for folks that haven't tried those modern Mission Impossibles, give it a shot. I mean, it's the apex of action movies, in my opinion.
Wow.
Action thrillers.
Suck it, John Wick.
Your words, not mine. Not even that. We have Dead Reckoning Part 1 this year, and I think Part 2 comes like the following year, maybe?
Uh-huh.
So we're in a Tom Renaissance, a Tomassance of sorts, Mia. Would you consider this a Tomassance?
I would say we are in a Tomassance. Are they going to bring back Tom Hollander as the Prime Minister in Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol?
He is
Rogue Nation.
The list.
Well, then I won't be going. Let me.
If you want Mia's $25, you gotta get.
Mia will be picketing outside of Dead Reckoning Part 1's opening night, waiting
big
for Tom
sign.
Hollander's
Bring
return.
Bring back the Prime Minister from Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
What's on your personal watch list for 2023, Mia, that you would want to spotlight for us?
I am ridiculously excited for Poor Things, which is the latest Yorgos Lanthimos film. He is my favorite working director, hands down. I love all of his stuff. So it's him and Emma Stone, who I am also a very big fan of. She's one of my favorite working actresses, especially in his works, like The Favorite. The Favorite's one of my all-time faves, all-time favorites, ha ha ha. And I was like following that production so closely when they were making it. And I was like counting down the days, and I'm doing the same thing with Poor Things. The little synopsis is, upon drowning herself to escape her abusive husband, a woman has her brain replaced with the brain of her unborn child with the help of an eccentric scientist named Godwin Baxter, who's played by Mitchell's Willem Dafoe.
Oh my god.
What a plot.
It is a bonkers synopsis. And I cannot wait for it. It just seems right up my alley. I'm very excited for that.
So many of like my faves are Christopher Abbott is in it. Yeah. Margaret Qualley is in it. Gerard Carmichael is in it. Like, he is bringing in some heavy hitters for this one. Mark Ruffalo, of course. Like, I'm Mark Ruffalo in like a movie again, not doing his Hulk thing. Like, let's go.
I added it to my watch list.
The campaign is working.
Mitchell, what movie you want to call out?
For me, I would say like ones that I'm stoked for Magic Mike's Last Dance. Like let's get that going. I'm also really excited for Megalopolis, the new Francis Ford Coppola movie. Like, he is back. He is self-funding this like epic that he's been dying to make forever. Rebel Ridge, the new movie from Jeremy Saulnier, the director of Green Room and Blue Ruin. Green Room is on my like my Letterboxd stats. My most logged movie is Green Room. I've watched it like 8 times since it came out. So ready for him to be back. But I would say the one that I want to call out the most that I think is going to be like such like a huge Letterboxd movie is called Bottoms. It is the new movie from Shiva Baby's director Emma Seligman. And it is her reuniting with Rachel Sennett, the star of that movie, star of Bodies, 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 you know, the icon Rachel Sennett, who is co-wrote this one with her. And it stars her and Ayo Edebiri as two unpopular queer girls who start a fight club in order to have sex before their high school graduation, which is like, that is the like greatest log line I've ever heard of a movie. I am immediately on board. I feel like people are going to be like chomping at the bit for this when it comes out.
Rebel Ridge. I also just added that to my watch list right now.
Rebel Ridge, Slim.
Yeah, I remember liking Blue Ruin. I mean, I also remember really liking Green Room too.
Should like it. You should watch it 8 times on Letterboxd.
Might be 7 times too many for me personally. I'll do lightning round on my other picks. Knock at the Cabin, my sweetie M. Night.
Back in an R rating for M. Night. Oh, I saw that. That's rad.
The key? Is this the key?
He's back.
And also 65, Adam Driver, potentially time travel, dinosaurs. I mean, how can you not have this on your watch list right now? You need to wake up.
I made a tweet when the trailer for this, which I feel like nobody, like not a lot of people knew about this movie. I don't, like, it seemed like a discovery when the trailer dropped suddenly. I made a tweet about like, I'm prepared for the moment that I give 65 a higher rating on my Letterboxd than like 99% of all the movies people are listing right now as the best movies of 2022. And I stand by that. I'm stoked.
You should stand by that. Mia, any lightning rounds you want to call out before we go into our watch list predictions?
I do. I do have to call out Saw X.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they're still making them. They keep saying they're going to stop and they never do. And I'm so happy. This is my franchise. Like, this is my John Wick. Jigsaw is my John Wick. And this is coming out in October, allegedly. This is another one I'm counting down the days for. Can I also give a funny little shout out, a surprise shout out?
Okay. Yeah,
please.
Dungeons and Dragons, Honor Whoa. Among Thieves.
Yes.
So I know this is, I just have to say something. I really have to.
Twist.
This comes out in March. I know. Well, this is some hot Hollywood goss. My friend went to a screening of it and she said it is so funny. She said it's genuinely so funny. She was laughing. Hugh Grant is in it. So Dungeons and Dragons. I can't wait to put that at my favorite movies of 2023 list.
That trailer did look good. It's got my boy in it. He's got that great hair.
Who's your boy? Chris Pine?
Chris Pine.
Oh, of all the old knives.
All the old knives, though. The contractor's own.
Four-star movie, by the way. All the old knives when I watched that screener. 4 stars, I can't. People.
This has gone full circle. This has been a whole year of Weekend Watchers going full circle right back to all the old knives.
It all leads back to those old knives. Okay. Let's talk about what's on our own watch lists. What are we hoping for in 2023? Will our watch lists grow, shrink? What's something we want to finally check off our lists?
That's a great question, Mia, first of all. I think it might be fun to just maybe we'll do this yearly and we'll see what our updates are next year. So I'm at 157 movies on my watch list.
Ridiculous. Do you even like movies with a number that low?
I love movies, you know, but sometimes I'm the kind of watch list user. I know everyone uses their watch list in different ways. I get bogged down if I have too many in there. I need to focus my movie watching to a shorter watch list. I also have a second watch list that I use called Upcoming. It like focuses my week. That might be a little crazy, I admit. So I'm hoping to make a focused effort to get my watch list to a lower number. That's just me personally. You don't have to use it that way, you know?
I certainly won't.
What's your number at, Mitchell? What's your prediction for the year?
My number is currently at 1,461, and I'm proud of it. Mia?
That was just an honest reaction.
I would never tell a lie on this podcast. 1,461. But listen,
I'm listening.
You and I told you about this the other day, you know, privately, discreetly. This is a safe space. I have my watch list, but I also have private lists that are priority watch lists, which has like 200 or so. Then
I thought that was a gag.
I have a priority watch list that is a private list on my Letterboxd account. Then I have a priority plus watch list, which is the ones I especially want to see. That's at about 100. Then I have a priority extra plus watch list.
Those are the ones
I want to see the most. And that's got like 30 or so. My partner Sam hates every single time I mention my private watch list
why.
Extensions of of my list. I've got some stuff going on. You can use it, as you said, you can use it any way you want, and none of them are wrong, especially not mine.
Priority plus. Oh my God, this is insane. I love it.
I also do one thing that I do really like to do is I make a list of 52 like movies that like are the ones that I like want to see like the most. At the beginning of every year. And I'm like, these are the movies, like, no matter what happens, I'm going to watch these movies before the end of next year. So I did that last year. I chalked off some really big blind spots, the Human Condition trilogy, Francis Ford Coppola's One from the Heart, To Live and Die in LA, I had never seen before. So like, those were some of the ones on my one from last year. I did just earlier this week make my 52 list for next year, and I've got some ones I'm pretty stoked to see on here.
Some bangers.
Hopefully, some ones that people love. So
let's do this. What is the oldest movie on your watch list? So I just looked at mine, and it's Mean Streets, Martin Scorsese, 1973.
You don't have anything? Wait,
that's
like
the oldest one?
No, I mean, like the one that you had on there. Okay.
The first one that I added. That's the oldest one that I've added. Not the oldest movie per se, but it's the oldest one sitting
Slim,
in my watch
you were about
list.
To get removed from the podcast.
I know.
Podcast.
Mitchell was climbing through the call to strangle me in that
Main
moment.
Main Street, Slim. What about you, Mia? What's the one that you put back on the longest to go on your watch list?
So the very first one is Let the Right One In. Can you believe I haven't seen that? And it's a vampire movie?
Wow.
Wow, wow, wow. Which that's right
up
your alley.
But the next one after that, which actually ties in, this is my goal this year. I really think this can happen. I'm finally going to watch Michael Mann's Heat.
Whoa. Oh, mic drop.
Yeah. And Michael Mann's Miami Vice.
Oh.
If I can do both of those next year, wow.
Just between us three. That was a HD DVD purchase that I made. Miami.
I remember
Michael
seeing
Mann's.
That on HD DVD.
Oh my God. I think I might have returned it the same day. But don't tell Mitchell that.
That's a great movie. The one on my watch list, the furthest back, way back in the early days of my watch listing, 1,461 films ago, Permanent Vacation from Jim Jarmusch's first movie, which is still on my watch list because I do this weird thing with some of my favorite directors where when I've seen all of their movies except for one, I kind of hold off on watching that last one because it feels sad to me to like watch like their last one. So ironically, the only Jim Jarmusch movie I haven't seen is his first movie. But I don't know how much longer it'll sit on there. It's not on any of my private priority extra plus watch lists. So I don't know. It seems like I might have a few to get through before I get to that one. Oh
I do God. The same thing. I just want to say that's why I haven't seen Miami Vice because it's my last Colin Farrell.
Sure.
Essentially, it's my last Colin Farrell in like a big, like acclaimed, you know,
the big
popular,
Colin Farrell
yeah,
one.
Yeah, like a, yeah. It's my last major Colin, and I'm scared.
He's real sweaty in it.
So we're not doing another episode until February. We're taking January off, but I think that's an interesting angle at some point for us to experiment with. Maybe we start our watch list from the oldest ones we've added. It almost like forces us to finally check some of those off the list. You know, the shuffle. Maybe the shuffle goes on pause. Maybe we go to the oldest one. We force ourselves to do our dang jobs.
I don't hate that.
Permanent Vacation, Jim Jarmusch, Miami Vice, and Mean Streets, potentially, on our horizon in 2023. What could go wrong? Thanks so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist this year, and it's brought to you by The Letterboxd Show.
You can follow Mia, Slim, Mitchell, that is me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. If you had the time, maybe consider rating the podcast on Spotify or leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps spread the word about the show.
Thanks to our crew, and thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On.
Thanks to Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript, and to you for listening. Weekend Watchlist is a Tape Deck production.
This is a Tape Deck podcast.